Welcome to the latest global news, recorded at midnight GMT on Wednesday the 1st of October. I'm Oliver Conway with a selection of highlights from across BBC World Service news today. Coming up, a man in the United States has been diagnosed with the Ebola virus.
This individual left Liberia on the 19th of September, arrived in the U.S. on the 20th of September, had no symptoms when departing Liberia or entering this country.
More than 6,500 people have been infected with Ebola this year. About 3,000 have died. So far, all the cases have been diagnosed in West Africa. But now the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the United States has confirmed that a man in Texas has been diagnosed with the virus. It's the first time Ebola has been confirmed in America. From Washington, Aleem McBull reports.
American health officials say the patient came to the US earlier this month from Liberia to visit family, but had no symptoms of Ebola at the time. It was several days before they sought medical help after developing a fever, and once in hospital in Texas, tests revealed they did indeed have Ebola, the first such case in America. Dr. Thomas Frieden is director of the US Center for Disease Control.
It is certainly possible that someone who had contact with this individual, a family member or other individual, could develop Ebola in the coming weeks, but there is no doubt in my mind that we will stop it here.
Medics are now trying to identify anyone who did come into contact with the Ebola patient since they became infectious, and are working to reassure the American public that a virus that's now estimated to have killed over 3,000 people in West Africa won't spread here.
Aleem McBull in Washington.
Welcome to the latest global news, recorded at 13 hours GMT on Thursday, the 2nd of October. I'm John Beasley with a selection of highlights from across BBC World Service news today. But first, the British and Sierra Leonean governments have been hosting a conference in London today to try to encourage progress in the fight against Ebola, which has caused such devastation in West Africa. The British government has pledged $200 million to Sierra Leone to help and is already the biggest bilateral donor to the country. But more than 3,000 people are already thought to have died in the region, and the number of people infected is doubling every 20 days, and time is short. So what can this conference hope to achieve? Ros Atkins spoke to our international development correspondent Mark Doyle, who was there.
I'm sitting in the garden of a beautiful garden, actually, of Lancaster House, which is just a stone's throw from Buckingham Palace. This is an event which the British and Sierra Leonean governments are jointly holding, mainly organised by the British, of course, because we're in London. And I have with me the London representative who's come out of Médecins Sans Frontières, who's come out of the meeting very kindly to talk to us, Vicky Hawkins. Vicky, what's the purpose of meetings like this in London?
So obviously, over the last few weeks, the level of international attention to the situation in West Africa has dramatically increased. And I understand the purpose of today to be to make concrete some of the commitments that have been made from the side of the international community, particularly the UK government, towards Sierra Leone. So there are many government representatives, there are representatives of other non-governmental organisations sitting in the room, and they are discussing what assistance they will bring to specifically Sierra Leone to help them to combat this unprecedented outbreak.
Have they made any big promises yet, any hundreds of millions of dollar promises or...
I think the main pledges are still to happen, but obviously we've heard some quite significant numbers over the last few weeks. I mean, 3,000 troops committed from the US, 700 beds committed from the side of the UK. Even with those commitments, much more needs to be done. The international community really needs to step up to this one, because what's currently on the table is still not going to be enough to actually get the outbreak under control.
So how much is needed? I mean, how many soldiers, how many hospital beds? Any idea?
No, it's really hard to quantify. But the other key aspect to it is that they need to materialise. They need to deliver on those commitments really fast. And at the moment, we are not seeing, despite the commitments, we're not seeing an increase in treatment capacity in the affected countries. And that's really the first vital step that needs to be taken.
So despite all of these promises, on the ground, it's still a desperate situation?
It's absolutely still a desperate situation. I mean, our treatment centre in Monrovia has been, you know, is completely overwhelmed. MSF has 3,000 staff. We're providing the bulk of the isolation facilities and treatment beds. We're really at a loss how one single NGO can be providing still the bulk of the response to this outbreak.
Vicky Hawkins from Médecins Sans Frontières here in London. Thank you very much, Ros.
Mark, thank you to you. Thanks to Vicky Hawkins from MSF. Well, let's speak to one of Vicky's colleagues in one of the countries that's worst affected by this Ebola outbreak. Laurence Sayi is MSF's emergency coordinator for Liberia. Laurence, first of all, just bring us up to date on the number of people you're having to treat and the facilities you have to do that, please.
Okay, so we have now a capacity in the treatment center of 250 beds. And the crazy thing that is happening is that we are not full because the ambulance system is not working properly. So you have some centers with people at the door and some centers with not enough people there. So I don't see yet the impact of all those new promises. We need a better system of connection and coordination in between the treatment center already in place.
So, Laurence, let's just explain this absolutely clearly to our listeners. What you're saying is that MSF has empty treatment beds in Ebola treatment centres because the ambulance system in Liberia is not delivering the patients to you. Who do you blame for that?
There is not enough beds in total in Monrovia. There is around 500 beds now, more or less, available. There is a plan for more than 1,000. And now we have this issue of no proper system to get the patient in the houses and bring them to the treatment center.
And Laurence, as I'm listening to you, I'm seeing a message coming in from Osman, listening to us in Freetown, Sierra Leone. He says, we're really afraid because nothing's been done to tackle this problem. I lost my little brother a week ago. We called for the ambulance for 3 days. They didn't come. We took him to the hospital ourselves, but he died just hours later. There'll be lots of listeners in West Africa frustrated and astonished by this. What's the quickest way to get this system working, to get the patients to you?
There is a central number that is not working properly. So it's basically organization. They have heard that there is more ambulance available, but the link in between being sick at home and being in a treatment center is not working for the moment.
Laurence Sayi, MSF's emergency coordinator for Liberia, speaking to Roz Atkins. And before that, we heard from Mark Doyle and Vicky Hawkins, MSF's executive director in London.
Welcome to the latest global news, recorded at midnight GMT on Thursday, the 9th of October. I'm Oliver Conway with a selection of highlights from across BBC World Service News today. Coming up...
We need people to step up now. Now is the time for action, not words. And frankly, there is not a moment to waste in this effort.
The U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry talking about Ebola. We'll bring you the latest as the U.S. says travellers from African countries worst affected by the disease will face tougher checks at American airports. The American authorities have said travellers from three West African nations worst affected by Ebola will face additional screening at 5 U.S. airports. A Liberian man who travelled to Texas last month died on Wednesday in Dallas. The U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, called for more help worldwide.
I'm here this morning to make an urgent plea to countries in the world to step up even further. There are additional needs that have to be met and to make sure that we protect people in all of our countries. The fact is, more countries can and must step up in order to make their contributions felt. Every nation has an ability to do something on this challenge, and we need people to step up now. Now is the time for action, not words. And frankly, there is not a moment to waste in this effort.
Our Washington reporter is Regini Vaidyanathan. So what exactly are the measures that have been announced?
What we're hearing from the authorities is an increased number of checks for travellers who are coming into 5 main airports in the US. Now, those airports will be Washington Dulles, which is the city where I am now, as well as international airports in Atlanta, Chicago and Newark, which is in New Jersey. Now, what officials are saying that they estimate around 150 people a day will be checked. Their temperatures will be taken using high-tech thermometers, which won't actually touch the skin. Now, what is interesting is they've picked these five airports because the White House believes that 93% of travellers from the three heaviest hit countries, Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea, travel through those airports. But what President Obama did say is that these will already support the protections they already have in place. So customs and borders officials already do look for signs of illness when travellers pass through, the same with flight crews. So this is just to step up the security in terms of trying to spot anyone who might be travelling with Ebola.
But how effective can they be when this man who died in Dallas was screened and he arrived in the US from Liberia?
Well, what some officials are saying is that a fever check probably wouldn't have actually caught the case of Ebola, which Thomas Eric Duncan had. He was the Liberian, of course, who was diagnosed in the US and died earlier today. So as you say, he wasn't actually showing the symptoms when he arrived in the United States. So yes, some might say, well, how effective will these be? Because it depends on what level of the disease someone might have in terms of being able to spot it. I think what officials will say is they're just trying to do more to catch any signs. Of course, it can't be 100% watertight.
And is that outbreak now contained? He did come into contact with a number of people before he was quarantined.
That is right. And what we're hearing is that there is a man who officials in Dallas are telling us that a sheriff's deputy is being treated, not necessarily for Ebola, but for symptoms. And he went into Mr. Duncan's house. Now, what officials are telling us is that he is a low risk patient, so he doesn't have Ebola. But of course, with this disease, what the issue is people who come into contact. So there is close monitoring of people who did come into contact with Mr. Duncan in Dallas.
Virginia Vaidyanathan in Washington. The Liberian president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, has said the response from the rest of the world has been too slow, but there are signs it might be picking up. Britain has announced it will send 750 military personnel as well as three helicopters and a ship to Sierra Leone to help efforts there. 300 American troops have arrived in neighbouring Liberia to set up field hospitals, and about 3,000 more are due to arrive over the next few days. In Europe, meanwhile, fear of Ebola is growing. Spain is treating its first homegrown case. It's thought a nursing assistant treating a man who caught Ebola abroad may have become infected by touching her own face. Teresa Romero was diagnosed on Monday. Since then, four other people have been quarantined on suspicion of harbouring the virus. From Madrid, here's Lucy Williamson.
Since this crisis began, Spain has been asking how its best-equipped quarantine unit could produce Europe's first domestic case of Ebola. Now, for the first time, answers are beginning to emerge. One of the doctors involved in the investigation, German Ramirez Olivenza, told journalists it may have been sparked by a tiny gesture.
She told me at some point, when taking the protective gear off, it might have come into contact with her face. She originally told me she didn't make any mistakes, so I talked with her again and asked if something different from what she'd first told me may have happened. She said she's very confused due to all the phone calls she's been receiving, but she might have come into contact with it.
Pressure is now on Spain's emergency services to contain any possible spread of the virus. At Ms. Romero's home outside Madrid, decontamination teams moved in as police stood guard. Neighbours described growing anxiety. One woman said she no longer hugged or kissed her friends. Another that she'd cancelled a local hospital appointment for fear of catching the disease. Five people are now in quarantine at Madrid's main hospital, though only Ms. Romero has so far tested positive. Speaking by phone to local media today, she said she was feeling a little better. And in a statement that will add to allegations of hospital mismanagement, she described the moment she found out she was infected. Nurses stopped coming into my room, she said, and the last time I saw them, they'd been wearing white suits. The doctor wouldn't tell me why, so I checked local media and saw that I'd been diagnosed with Ebola.
Lucy Williamson in Madrid.
What is needed? What has to be done?
I think that it's very important that people understand that this country is at a tipping point. I think that's the basis of the UK government's decisions over the last few weeks to make major investments. And essentially, this is a disease that is hard to catch, but once you've caught it, it is deadly. And I think that the requirements for the country fall into three categories, really. First of all, there's the treatment, which has got a lot of coverage, and that means trying to hydrate people and support them once they've got the disease. There isn't a cure in that sense, an easy cure. The second thing, which is the hardest to do but the most important, is to contain the disease, to stop it spreading, going community by community around the country to stop the spread of the disease. And I've got, my organization has 200 staff in this country, and we have had some success in some parts of the country in mobilizing local communities to report on people who have got the disease, to isolate them, to take the basic precautions to prevent its spread. And then thirdly and finally, and I'm afraid rather gruesomely, the disease is at its most dangerous in dead bodies, and it's absolutely essential that there are proper provision for the disposal of dead bodies before they contaminate too many other people.
Right, but what we can't do clearly with the best will in the world is give Sierra Leone a proper functioning health system.
I think that's absolutely right. Obviously, this is a country that's made big strides over the last decade, but it's still a country which, I think I'm right in saying, had 130 doctors at the time of the outbreak for a population of about 6 million. It had 3,800 health workers. I mean, these are the basics of tackling poverty and of building up health systems. This has to be a proper mobilization on the part of the Sierra Leone government as well as the international community. And I'm seeing the president today as well as meeting my own staff. I want to get a real assessment for myself of what needs to be done, because we face daily questions about the risks to our staff, but also the absolute humanitarian imperative to do as much as possible to prevent a disease that currently numbers in the thousands from escalating to the tens or hundreds of thousands that the World Health Organization and others have referred to.
But putting it very bluntly, if we were prepared to spend a lot more money helping, and of course the Americans, helping countries like Sierra Leone, would it make a big difference? Would it save, at this stage, a lot of lives?
My message is that we can make a lot of difference with a lot of money, but money alone will not do it. I mean, to be fair to the British government, I'm not here obviously as their spokesman, but the UK government, Department for International Development, have been leading the charge on this. They have been making big deployments, both announcing big deployments of military and of funding, but that alone will not do it. This is a disease that spreads through bodily contact, and that takes you right to the heart of the basic ways that communities work. These are not semi-detached houses. People are living close, cheek by jowl, in Freetown, the capital where I am, over a million people living very close to each other. And in those circumstances, throwing money at problems doesn't work. You need proper systems to ensure, first, that the community understands the problem, secondly, that it takes the proper precautions, and thirdly, that it addresses some very fundamental issues of the way communities like this work. Just to give you an example, there are local traditions here about how dead bodies are dealt with, how people come and visit dead bodies, how they touch dead bodies. That is extremely dangerous, and turning that round is absolutely key to making sure that the most basic mathematics of this are addressed. Let me just explain it to you.
Very quickly, if you would.
If we're in a situation apologies for the length, but I appreciate the interest. If there's more than one person catching it for every person who's got it, you've got a very serious problem and the danger of an epidemic. Driving that number down so that the spread is stopped, as well as the treatment offered, is absolutely key to saving this country.
We didn't anticipate that this outbreak was going to be as big as it has become, but frankly, nobody was in a position to anticipate that at the time. I think the important thing now is not to look backwards, but to look at where we are at the moment and how we're going further forward. And we've seen in the past few days and weeks a tremendous escalation of the international response and a huge amount of support. And that support is clearly the kind of support that we now need to get this rather large epidemic under control.
Are you getting what you need now? Are these countries getting what they need?
Yes, they're beginning to get it much more quickly
beginning,
now than they
but
were.
I mean, we know that in other disasters around the world, don't we? You think back to the terrible floods in Pakistan. An awful lot was promised, and actually, when it came to it, it didn't all arrive. Are you really seriously confident now that the international community is today doing what it needs to do?
Yes, I'm confident. The piece that you had just before this was really about scaling up logistics, the American support. Logistics is what we need on a very large scale. Let me give you a few numbers. We've asked for a response of about $1 billion. We've got 300 million of that with another 150 million pledged. So we're a little bit less than half of what we need at the moment, but it's climbing quickly all the time. We know that the bed capacity we need in the three countries is about 4,000 to cope with the patients that we've got. We have only about a quarter of that at the moment, but we have another 1,500 beds in construction at the moment. So the ramp-up of support is now very large indeed. We're pushing about 10,000 reported cases. We'll probably see another 10,000 cases during the course of this epidemic. But if we do what we know needs to be done...
Another 10,000 cases, you see?
Well, it's going to be very difficult to slow the epidemic down quickly, because in the places that are worst affected in those three countries at the moment, the capital cities, Conakry, Freetown, Monrovia, we have Ebola chains of transmission that are spreading in communities where it is hard to control. We know we can control it, but we're seeing 1,000 cases a week at the moment, and our expectation in WHO is that this may go on for some weeks to come,
and to
before
some
we
extent,
can start forcing the numbers down.
It will spread across the world, won't it?
Well, to some extent it will spread. There is bound to be, with so much travel around the world, there is bound to be the escape of infections into other parts of the world, and we've seen that very clearly in the last few days. We've seen it in the United States. The incident in Spain has been widely publicised. The alert in Macedonia yesterday, which hopefully will come to nothing, was another example. What all of that indicates is that we are focused not only on the countries that are particularly in need, the three countries that I've mentioned, but also in the risk of spread to neighbouring African countries and other countries around the world. There's a very high level of vigilance at the moment, and that's exactly how it should be.
Yes, and talking of vigilance, the British government, the Americans have already done this, the British government are introducing screening at ports and airports.
Yes.
Is that helpful?
It's an extreme precaution. We know that the chance of a case turning up in the UK is relatively small. The chance of someone turning up in the UK actually displaying symptoms of Ebola-like disease is even smaller than that. It will require some very precise targeting of people who are at risk, strong evidence, not only of the symptoms that they're suffering, but who they've been in contact with. It potentially could prevent a few cases, but I suspect that the more important impact of that will be to hugely increase awareness. It's already high, but the more awareness that we have of countries that are at risk, the greater the appreciation that this is a global problem and not just a problem limited to West Africa, the stronger position we'll be in. On the UK response, from a WHO perspective, we are hugely grateful that the UK is investing so strongly, particularly in Sierra Leone, but not only in that country, because the building of treatment centres there, which is urgent and necessary, is really going to have an effect, no question.
Of course, we'd have to have this conversation all over again and from a very different and much graver, even graver standpoint, if this disease mutated and became transmittable in an airborne way, which some experts have said is certainly not likely, but it is possible and sort of adds to the urgency, doesn't it, in stopping in its tracks now.
Well, this has been a surprise, this outbreak. You mentioned earlier that the response had been slow because we weren't expecting this to be a different kind of Ebola epidemic from what we've seen before, but it has been much bigger. This is an outbreak that has surprised us in a number of ways. As regards to mutating to becoming airborne, that is wholly speculative at the moment. There is no scientific basis for thinking that that will happen. But we're ready for surprises. And because we don't quite know what's going to happen next, nobody knows that, we need to be extremely vigilant.
You're listening to The World Tonight with Ritula Shah. From tomorrow, passengers arriving at Heathrow coming on the main routes from Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea will be screened for symptoms of Ebola. Some 85% of passengers coming to the UK from West Africa arrive at Heathrow, but the measure will be extended to other airports and the Eurostar from next week. Speaking in the Commons, the Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, said although an infected person may come in from West Africa, for the moment the risk of someone catching Ebola in the UK is low, and he believes the crisis can be contained.
We should remember that the international community has shown that if we act decisively, we can defeat serious new infectious disease threats such as SARS and pandemic flu. The situation will get worse before it gets better, but we shouldn't flinch in our resolve to defeat Ebola both for the safety of the British population and as part of our responsibility to some of the poorest countries on the planet.
More than 4,000 people have now died of Ebola in West Africa. In Liberia, the virus has already claimed the lives of 95 health workers. And as Benno Mukla of the Voice of America reports, for the burial teams, the task of removing infected bodies is a grim and risky one.
A woman died. Her brother is heartbroken. A local burial team is getting ready to remove the body from the village in the Robertsfield community near Liberia's international airport. Removing dead bodies infected with Ebola is a risky job. The undertakers start with a hearse and then take on the woman's house.
We have to disinfect everything that we are mistakenly getting in contact with him because he's not supposed to touch anything in there.
So, but I mean, it's crazy, like all the people, like the guys like around us, like they have no protection at all.
It's the problem that we got in Liberia. Most people they are not believing that the virus is real.
After disinfecting the body, the undertakers are preparing themselves to put the body into the body bag.
At this point is the risky part. So it's only advisable to touch the body one time. And that is by taking the body from the ground straight into the body bag. That's the only time the guys are going to get in contact with the body. Infection around this body, I would say, is 100%.
While the men are disinfecting themselves, the father shouts at them. The husband can only watch how the undertakers are carrying his dead wife away. The burial team takes the body to a nearby village. The undertakers bury the body far into the bush. After more than 200 burials since the Ebola outbreak in their area, none of the team has gotten sick. The men say they are not scared. They need to do it, because if they didn't, more of their people would get infected and die.
Benno Mukla of Voice of America there. Well, health workers dealing with Ebola should follow a strict protection regime when preparing to start work and when removing their protective clothing at the end of a shift. But nurses in Texas and Madrid, part of teams treating an Ebola patient, have caught the virus, suggesting it's easy for the protection system to go wrong. Dr. Ben Newman is a virologist and Ebola expert at the University of Reading. I asked him to describe the protocol health workers are meant to follow.
The procedure is basically that you cover as much of your body as possible with different kinds of clothing. You'll probably have one or two layers of gloves. The first one's probably tucked inside the suit. The second one will be over the top. And you want to be able to remove the parts of clothing and sort of shed them if they become contaminated quickly and without jeopardizing the containment of the rest of you.
So what would be the first item of clothing that you might remove?
So the first thing I would remove if I had two gloves on would be the outer glove. Because if you've been doing something with a patient, that's the most likely area that's going to be contaminated with Ebola bodily fluids. So get rid of that straight away. If you're wearing disposable shoe covers, that's the point where you take those off as you're stepping out of the containment room. Then after that, I would remove the hood and then the suit and then the gloves. As long as the gloves are the last thing to come off, then they can protect you against any Ebola that's caught on the suit. And then you just make sure you take the gloves off in a particular way that they end up one inside the other in a nice little ball, and then wash your hands really well.
So what do you think is the trickiest point? When could this all go wrong? When are mistakes likely to be made?
Your hands are the most likely part to be contaminated. We do a lot of things like just scratch a nose or an eye without really thinking about it. And it's little mistakes like that that can lead to infection with Ebola. And that's what is suspected to have gone wrong in the case in Texas and the other one in Spain. It would be nice if Ebola wasn't such a strict teacher, but it's a very, very harsh teacher.
But we've seen in the United States and indeed in Spain too, where nurses who have been treating Ebola patients have then contracted the virus themselves, have to some extent been blamed for their own predicament. Is that fair?
At the end, I think if you're putting on the suit and going in to do the job, at some point you have to take responsibility for your actions. I mean, there's nobody else that's going to have picked up the bodily fluids and put them onto the eyes, nose, or mouth of that person other than themselves. At the same time, it's really experience that makes the difference, and training is just not enough. It's training plus lots and lots of practice. There are some people who are better at this than others. Doctors Without Borders, Medicine Sans Frontières, are absolutely the best in the world at this. They've been treating Ebola outbreaks without losing anyone for decades now. They work very hard to make sure that people don't get stressed out, and they monitor people all the time as they're learning. It's a slow process, building up enough experience to be able to work with Ebola patients confidently.
Dr. Ben Newman there on the challenges facing health workers. Well, the World Health Organization has described the Ebola outbreak in West Africa as the most severe acute health emergency seen in modern times. But while international concerns growing about the wider impact of the situation, the UN said today that its appeal for $1 billion to respond to the crisis has so far only reached a quarter of its target. David Nabarro is the UN Special Envoy on Ebola. I asked him to describe how fast the virus is spreading.
The outbreak seems to be doubling in terms of the number of affected people about every 4 weeks. In some parts of West Africa, it's doubling more quickly than others. Unless people who've got the disease can be kept isolated from others, they're likely to pass on the infection. So what we're trying to do now is to ensure that everybody who's suspected of having the disease is brought into a place where they can be treated or cared for as quickly as possible. That's how we'll get the outbreak curve down.
But if the numbers are accelerating, how realistic is it to bring it under control?
Well, it will be brought under control. It's a question of how quickly, because what we're involved in is supporting the governments with an enormous influx of medical personnel, nursing personnel, people to run Ebola treatment centres, people to run community care centres, plus also cash to help them employ their own health workers and give them extra bonus pay, because it's a dangerous condition to be dealing with.
Well, is part of the problem that the WHO, the UN, were simply too slow to react, simply too slow to, if you like, sound the warning bells?
Well, I hope you'll forgive me. I'm really focused on now and what we're going to do in the next few weeks and months. Let's examine what happens once we've got the outbreak under control with a sort of proper retrospective analysis and see whether or not things could have been done differently. All we're seeing now is this is the first time that an Ebola outbreak has got into urban communities. It's the first time that it's had this degree of suffering associated with it. We're in completely uncharted waters right now, and we've got to deal with the situation as it is.
How long, then, do you think before you believe you may have Ebola under control?
Well, I do believe that we'll start to see the outbreak curve, which is the curve of numbers of cases against time, starting to decline by the end of the year, provided we can get all the resources we need into the countries and get them properly organised. Then the real test is, when does transmission stop? And I hope that that will be the case during next year, during 2015. And it's really important that we get a massive effort now, and that will enable us to reach that goal. If not, we might be a little bit longer, and that would be most unfortunate,
but,
because the longer it goes on, the more people get ill and die.
Essentially, you're saying thousands more may die then?
It will get worse before it gets better. But what I am saying is, with the level of response that we're now seeing from the world, that we think that we have a very good chance of getting it under control by the end of the year. And that means at least that there will not be a massive increase in the numbers of people who suffer and die compared with where we are now. And that's what we're focused on.
One last question then. The UK is following, I think, the United States introducing screenings at Heathrow tomorrow.
Yes.
Many health experts suggest that this won't work. It's ineffective. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Our recommendations, based on advice from the World Health Organization, is that the place to screen is when people are leaving a country. It is the exit screening that is the primary and most effective means. I'm very aware that a number of countries are introducing entrance screening, and I think that does provide reassurance for their own people, which is a very important part of the response.
Reassurance, but not necessarily any real practical medical value.
Well, that's your words. I'm just simply saying this is what people are doing to get double protected.
David Nabarro, the UN Special Envoy on Ebola.
Ebola spreads.
Blood test on a caregiver proved positive for Ebola.
Dallas protocol breach.
That breach in protocol resulted in this infection.
Snapchat hacked.
If they're going to send something that they're not comfortable with their grandmother seeing, they should not be sending it.
Good morning. I'm Steve Kathan. With the CBS World News Roundup, a Dallas healthcare worker has Ebola, and the first transmission of the virus in this country has officials blaming a breach in protocol. CDC Director Dr. Thomas Frieden.
We're now looking at all individuals
who cared for the index patient. We'll be determining how many of those may potentially have had contact that would have resulted in a break of protocol and possible contamination.
This is Steve Futterman in Dallas. This nurse, who has now tested positive for Ebola, did help treat Thomas Eric Duncan, the Liberian man who died from the Ebola virus here last week. This is the first known case of Ebola being contracted or transmitted in the U.S. The apartment building where the woman lived has been cordoned off by police, and authorities are trying to identify people she may have had contact with.
CBS's Manuel Bajorquez has more.
In the nurse's neighborhood, volunteers handed out flyers about Ebola, and those within a four-block radius received a reverse 911 call.
Please be advised that a healthcare worker who lives in your area has tested positive for the Ebola virus. Precautions are already in place to clean all known potential areas of contact.
The call was meant to reassure neighbors they are not believed to be at risk, but the sight of yet another Dallas apartment being decontaminated was unsettling.
It's scary, it's creepy that it's just a few houses down.
I'm Peter Mayer in Washington. In the latest sign of White House concern about the Ebola situation, President Obama's ordering the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to quickly determine the cause of what's described as the apparent breach in infection control at the Dallas hospital. He wants lessons learned from that to be shared. He's ordering federal agencies to take further steps to make sure the nation's hospitals have standards in place to treat any future Ebola patients.
Ebola could prove a threat to the world's chocolate supply. Ivory Coast, producer of the raw ingredient in M&M's, Snickers, and other chocolate bars, has shut its borders with Liberia and Guinea, two outbreak countries. That will limit the workforce to pick beans.
I'm scared and I'm worried because this Ebola thing is getting me crazy. It's getting everybody crazy. It's getting everybody worried.
What is your biggest fear?
My biggest fear is you don't know who you're meeting out there, interacting with. You're sitting in a taxi, you don't know who have that virus. So when you're in a taxi, you're like scared. You don't want to touch somebody who is sitting next to you.
UNICEF Liberia has provided new tents, mattresses and other supplies to help the Liberian government, okay, and Doctors Without Borders and Medicine Sans Frontières, okay, complete an urgently needed expansion of the LY Ebola Treatment Center.
Everybody is nervous.
Yeah, and make you more afraid, especially when you sit with somebody and tell you, say, they don't believe Ebola is real. Imagine what
happens. Exactly. Do you know anyone who have contracted the disease?
I know of a friend that contracted a disease. It surprised everybody to know that he has this disease because it's like he was the one that telling everyone, say, Ebola is real, Ebola is real, Ebola is real.
Liberia is such a small country. 9 times out of 10, you will know of somebody, of a friend or a family member. As for me, a friend of mine caught the virus from his family members. Unfortunately, 3 of them passed away, but he overcame the virus. He has been certificated and actually out of the JFK Medical Center right now. But his other biggest problem he's facing now is acceptance from the community. He called me up, told me, said, look, the biggest thing right now, nobody want to shake my hand. Nobody want to speak. Everybody speaks to me from a distance. Everybody that was in my house, I'm back home now. Everybody's moving. And so that is a problem.
On Saturday, a response team came here. And then they went to her house, but they didn't go close to her. They were just questioning her about signs and symptoms. But she said she wasn't experiencing none of those different symptoms. So she stayed here on Saturday, Sunday. She has been trying to come outside now to show that she's been strong. But now she's crying from in her house and asking us to please tell the people to come for her. She wants to go.
Our government has clearly stated that we cannot handle this ourselves in the whole sub-region. So that is welcoming. President Obama said he was even calling for more support from the world on this, what has been described as a global threat. So I think this is forthcoming. We are still sitting and watching and praying for more intervention. What is your thought about how Liberia will get through this?
For now, it's like everything is going slow. Business, school, job, you know, everything is going slow. Right. But I pray everything restore back to a normal place.
Mm-hmm.
That is what we pray for.
From the onset of this whole Ebola crisis, when it started, people denied. Now people trying to accept the fact that Ebola is real, you know, take the preventive measures, they follow all these things. There's a positive light that it will get better, but we just need the time and the workspace.
This morning, let's start with good news. 12 persons released from
Ebola treatment centers.
Liberia will get through this. Ebola has definitely came in, exposed our weaknesses in our health sector in the whole sub-region. The JFK Medical Center reported that the last 3 weeks, 60 people died, but at the same time, 50 people walked away from the containment center. So it's slowly, but I think we will overcome this. I'm hoping faster than what it is right now, but we will get through this. But the problem is, after we get through this, there are some other areas that we are far behind, educational-wise, the school system, as you know, is shut down right now. The economy is going to be hit hard with almost like $200 million deficit. The small businesses are suffering. So we look forward to a stimulus package that will get us back on our feet.
It's 10 o'clock. Welcome to the World Tonight with Carolyn Quinn. Passengers from West African countries affected by Ebola are to be screened for the disease at the UK's biggest airports and Eurostar terminal. Can it work in practice?
You don't come up with a half-baked, politically inspired way of appeasing political parties or indeed the media.
We'll be hearing from the Home Office Minister, Norman Baker, and we hear from the World Bank's chief economist for Africa on the long-term prospect for the region.
In Liberia, we suspect that whereas around 50% of the population were already in poverty, that number could go up as high as 80%. So there is a human face to the economic impact as well.
The government has announced new measures to try to prevent the spread of the Ebola virus to the UK, only hours after dismissing calls to do so. Downing Street said people from West African countries at the heart of the outbreak would face what it described as enhanced screening arrangements at Heathrow and Gatwick airports and at Eurostar terminals. The Foreign Office has said it's investigating reports that a British man who's died in Macedonia had symptoms of the disease. Here's our political correspondent, Mike Sargent.
There's been a rapid shift in the government's policy on screening passengers. Earlier, ministers said there were no plans for UK checks on those travelling from Sierra Leone, Liberia and Guinea. The advice from the World Health Organization was that such measures were unlikely to be effective. But now the chief medical officer has decided that screening may offer additional protection. The new arrangements will cover Heathrow, Gatwick and the Eurostar terminals and will involve questions about the passengers' recent travel history. An assessment may also be carried out by trained medical personnel rather than Border Force staff. But Downing Street says the overall risk to the public continues to be very low, as the UK has well-tested systems for managing infectious disease.
The presidents of the three West African countries worst affected by Ebola have pleaded for more help from the international community. They told the annual meeting of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank in Washington that the global response to the outbreak had failed to keep up with the spread of the disease. Ernest Bai Kuruma, the president of Sierra Leone, said simply, "Our people are dying."
The fight on the ground in Sierra Leone urgently needs the support of people gathered here today to combat this virus. Without you, we cannot succeed. Without your quick response, a tragedy unforeseen in modern times will threaten the well-being and compromise the security of people everywhere.
Blood transfusion for Ebola patient.
The young Texas nurse receives plasma from an Ebola survivor.
Good morning. I'm Steve Kathan with the CBS World News Roundup. The race is on to save the Ebola patient in Dallas, a nurse who got the virus from a Liberian man who died last week. 70 hospital staffers are now being watched. CBS's Steve Futterman is in Dallas.
Officials still don't know exactly how Nina Pham contracted the Ebola virus. She remains in isolation, being treated for the deadly illness. As part of her treatment, Pham has now received a transfusion of plasma from Dr. Kent Brantley, an Ebola survivor. Plasma that's full of Ebola-fighting antibodies. Those who know Pham are concerned.
Sweet girl. Unfortunate. You know, it's sad. Somebody so young and, you know, hopefully she makes it through it.
Jennifer Joseph is a nurse who was trained by Pham.
She taught me infection control and hand hygiene and protocol. Like, I learned so much of that from her.
Nina Pham did have a dog, a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. The dog named Bentley has not shown any signs of Ebola, and officials say they do not plan to euthanize the animal. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Dallas.
CDC Director Dr. Thomas Frieden says he would not be surprised if there are more cases. He's called for hospitals to think Ebola and improve safety protections for workers.
We have to rethink
the way we address Ebola infection control, because even a single infection is unacceptable.
A UN medical worker infected with Ebola in Liberia has died in Germany. University of Kansas doctors are treating a medic who served on a ship off the West African coast. He's in isolation. Test results should come back later today. The government vows to step up its Ebola response as questions swirl about the handling of cases so far. We're live with CBS's Heather Bosch.
Some members of Congress are calling for a ban on travelers coming into the U.S. from Ebola hot zones in West Africa. Republican Michael Burgess.
I don't know for how long, but at least allow our medical personnel here a chance to catch up.
The CDC admits it was too slow to get involved in the case of Thomas Duncan, who contracted Ebola in Liberia and traveled to Dallas, and that a CDC official allowed a nurse who treated Duncan to fly, even when she reported a low-grade fever. And she may have had symptoms on the flight. The CDC is racing to find all 132 passengers who traveled with her. Federal health officials are heading to Capitol Hill today.
This is Pam Coulter in Washington. The CDC's Tom Frieden and NIH's Anthony Fauci will face pointed questions from members of Congress who are increasingly concerned that not enough is being done to stop the spread of Ebola in the U.S. National Nurses United Director Roseanne DeMauro said many of their members are angry at the CDC and Congress.
This is our policymakers who've underfunded public health in this country. This is a bipartisan lack of funding.
This is Steve Futterman in Dallas. Also appearing before the Congressional Committee will be Dr. Daniel Varga, one of the top officials from the much-criticized Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital. He will offer an apology and admit his hospital made key mistakes. Just over 100 miles south of Dallas in the city of Belton, there is concern following the revelation that two Belton students were on board that Cleveland to Dallas flight. Susan Kincannon is the superintendent.
We have heard from our local officials that the risk is very low and that our students are safe.
Despite that reassurance, three Belton schools are closed today. They are being disinfected. And another person on board that flight, a member of the military, along with that person's family, are said to be in quarantine in Fort Worth.
Well, CBS News Chief Medical Correspondent John LaPook joins us now. John, Nurse Amber Vinson called the CDC to say her temperature was 99.5 before boarding that Frontier Airlines flight. She was told it was okay. She was below the high-risk category.
That is very disquieting to me because it shows a lack of common sense. Yes, technically, that nurse did not fit the criteria for somebody who had a fever, and the CDC person was looking at a chart and said, oh, she's not at high risk. But use your common sense. She was exposed to Mr. Duncan in the same way that Nurse Pham was, so wouldn't it make sense that she could have the same risk? She might have Ebola. Let's keep her in Ohio.
Now, what about this second nurse? She's been sent to Atlanta. The first one remains in Dallas. Do you have any indication as to why the treatment changed there?
There are four treatment centers in the United States: Emory, Nebraska, the NIH, and Montana. These are places that have trained for years in how to take care of people with infectious agents like Ebola. Those are good places for people to be treated.
Any indication, though, why the other nurse is left behind in Dallas and isn't going to one of those centers?
That first nurse, Nurse Pham, is reportedly doing okay right now, so maybe they're thinking that the risk of transferring her outweighs the possible benefits, but certainly that's something that could be considered in the future.
Dr. John LaPook, thanks very much. Amber Vinson went to the Cleveland area to plan her wedding with her family. David Klein is the mayor of Talmadge, Ohio, where Vinson spent much of her time.
There's no symptoms with anybody. There's no Ebola in Summit County, and they just wanted us to rest assured of that.
Frontier Airlines has taken the plane out of service that Vinson flew back to Dallas, flight 1143 on Monday.
The Airbus 320 was flown from Cleveland here to Denver with only a crew on board. It was placed in a Frontier hangar out of service. The airline CEO has emailed employees telling them that the plane has been thoroughly sanitized, with some seat covers and carpeting being removed. Six crew members have been placed on paid leave for 21 days as a precaution.
That's KCNC-TV reporter Rick Salinger. There are new precautions today at four U.S. airports, enhanced Ebola screening for passengers coming here from West Africa.
So long as it's going to keep it from spreading around, then yeah, it's necessary.
You'd expect to be safeguarded where possible, and where and obviously it safeguards the rest of the nation as well, doesn't it?
Those passengers in Atlanta, the other three airports with the new screening, Newark Liberty, Chicago O'Hare, and Dulles outside Washington. It seems Ebola fears are only adding to the worry on Wall Street. It could be another sell-off day. S&P futures are down 17 points. Yesterday, stocks plunged at the open, rebounded, plunged again, and bounced back before the close. Still, the Dow finished 173 points lower. CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason.
I think the market is trying to find a bottom in an era where the Fed is pulling back on its stimulus. It's about to end it. A bottom in a period where Europe is slowing markedly. We haven't had a correction since 2011, I think. So a pullback to some degree in a market that's run up above 17,000 is actually not unexpected.
European and Asian markets were down today.
This is Dan Damon with your World Update daily commute, recorded on Friday at 5:30 a.m. U.S. East Coast time. Coming up, as the United Nations appeals for more donations to help stop the spread of Ebola, the chief medical officer in Liberia tells us how she went into voluntary quarantine.
The first thing is for my husband to move into the guest room. I used my own utensils. For more than 15 years, I've not washed my own clothes. I did that myself.
The United Nations has launched another urgent appeal for donations to help fight Ebola. The Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, says $1 billion US dollars trust fund that he launched in September has received just $100,000 so far. Liberia has been the worst hit by the disease, and one of the women at the forefront of the fight against the deadly virus is the country's chief medical officer. She is Dr. Bernice Dunn. She put herself in voluntary home quarantine for 21 days after one of her assistants died from Ebola. She's back to work this week, and we got in touch with her. Did she experience stigma and exclusion, even though she wasn't sick? And what was it like for her at home for 3 weeks?
It is one thing to tell someone you have to stay home in quarantine for 21 days and we observe you. And it is another thing for it to be yourself, knowing that you could be incubating a very deadly virus. That was a little bit scary. And so, like every human being, there was fears for the first few days. For me, I'm a Christian. I told myself, I entrusted myself in the hands of the Lord from the beginning, and I knew he was going to carry me through this.
I was going to ask you, how did you keep your spirits up?
Though I was afraid, but there were a lot of people praying for me. There were people who texted me. There were people who called to pray. There were people who sent me emails with Bible verses and their prayers. And that was like almost every hour of the day.
And you took plenty of practical precautions as well. You sterilized most of the house, I think.
Yes. From the night I got the result of my colleague, the first thing is for my husband to move into the guest room so we do not have physical contact. I used my own utensils and decontaminated them myself. Even whilst I was home and had to stay in quarantine, the clothes I used, my beddings, everything. For more than 15 years, I've not washed my own clothes. I did that myself. Of course, we decontaminated, used chlorine solutions to wipe the whole house on a daily basis. The children knew they were not supposed to have physical contact with me, even though I was not sick, because you can only transmit the disease when you are sick. But we took all those precautions.
What about the stigma that you might still be suffering, that people are still nervous to be near you? Has any of that happened?
No, I did not experience that. Now, whilst I was home, there were a few friends who came to visit. They talked to me, they encouraged me. I was surprised that happened. On Sunday, I was in church and everybody was happy to see me. So I did not really experience the stigma.
You took a very responsible decision, but of course, some people are less willing to quarantine themselves. Do you think that there should be laws imposing that?
I think we should just encourage everybody to use the self-discipline. Because just the fact that you know you could be harboring a virus disease, that is already depressing, something that could kill you fast. So you wouldn't want to add additional stress. I think there should be a lot of counseling going along with it. Now, one thing I noticed in Liberia from the onset, Liberians who we asked to stay home on a home quarantine were looking up to us for medications to help them through. That one was not readily available at the time. I think those are things that we need to take into consideration.
The challenges lie ahead still for Liberia. What do you think is the next step?
My message to all Liberians is we shouldn't touch one another. The thing is, when someone is sick, you do not know. For us Africans, when we are sick, we tend to go about our daily duties until we can't help it. So you do not know when someone is sick until the person is very, very sick. Not to mention when touching a sick person. The disease is transmitted through touching people who are very sick and coming in contact with body fluids or dead bodies. So once you don't do that, once every one of us in Liberia don't do that, starting today, within 21 days, there will be no new transmission.
Dr. Bernice Dunn, who put herself into voluntary quarantine because one of her assistants became sick with Ebola, with a message for the rest of Liberia. This is World Update.